Mommy told me something all little girls should know. It's all about the devil, and I've learned to hate him so. She said he causes trouble when you let him in the room. He will never ever leave you if your heart is filled with gloom. So let the sun shine in.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Blood and Black Run podcast. I'm Ryan from coldsploitation.com, and I'm joined with my co-host, Martin.
How's it going?
Doing pretty well.
We're doing another one. Another episode of Promised Episode, but not fulfilling Promised Episode.
Yeah, right. Yeah, last time I think we promised Asteroid City, or we promised to try to get to it, and it's not playing around. It is playing slightly around us, but not like in a close distance to us.
We can already rent it, though. I saw on YouTube. So,
oh, do they have that?
Yeah. So we might have to go that route. I'm kind of surprised they already got it on streaming services.
Yeah, kind of a pain. It's not at our local theater. It's kind of interesting. I don't know why. But
eight theater plays, and they only ever have four films showing at a time.
Yeah.
Probably three of them are Barbie right now.
Yeah. Oh, and also just to note too, might be a little bit noisier than usual in the background as we're podcasting during the day, which is not something that we normally do. Normally do it at night where it's nice and quiet. My kids are in bed, so if we have visitors, that's why doing it during the day, because Martin had to purchase a new car this week. Fun times.
Can you hear? I'm doing laundry at the moment. Can you even hear that in the background? Or is that noise canceled out pretty good?
Nope. That's canceled out. We're all good.
There we go. Look at that. Professionals here.
So instead of Asteroid City, we had to come up with something else. And I picked one that I wanted to do for a little while that I thought was going to be a fun movie to talk about, but I wasn't really sure like exactly when we should do it. It is kind of a good movie for Halloween, but we normally go with themed things for Halloween, so it might be tough to fit that in. So instead of doing it for Halloween, I thought we could fit it in now, and it's like in between some of our other themes that we're doing of late. So this one is a movie that came out, I think, in like about 2016, I remember. It was one that was actually probably one of the most talked about horror movies of 2016. Kind of a surprise affair because it was more of like one of those lower budget movies. It was released by IFC Films, which I don't know if you've heard or seen anything about like the IFC Films horror lineup, but they are very touch and go. they could have some pretty good ones, and they had some pretty dreadful ones.
It's like a Blumhouse.
Yeah, exactly. So you never really knew what you were going to get with those movies. So, you know what, this one was one that came out and this was completely surprising. And I remember seeing it at the time and actually thinking that it was very good, really enjoyed it. And I think part of the reason for that is like, if you watch it in the right atmosphere, it is a very fun movie to watch, especially for a horror movie. It gets a lot of the eerie atmosphere, supernatural elements, does that pretty well. And we're talking about The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Never heard of it going into this.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not like had like a big blow up at some point, but it was well talked about back when it came out. A lot of people did enjoy this movie. It got a Blu-ray release around the same time. And it was one of the, you know, one of the bigger horror movies of 2016. Directed by Andre Avridal, however you say it, who directed Troll Hunter in 2010, which got remade by Guillermo del Toro later on. And he also directed Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which I never actually saw. That was one of those movies that came out, and I thought I was going to see it, and, you know, because it was part of my childhood, and then I never ended up watching it, which is kind of weird. But so he really hasn't had too much work, but he's been involved in a lot of what have been considered fairly well-reviewed horror movies. Troll Hunter, I think, which I actually never seen it, but was pretty highly reviewed at the time it came out in 2010 as well. It was not released in English, which is why we got a English remake, but you know, another one of the big ones for him. So following up on that with Autopsy of Jane Doe was another, you know, good directorial follow-up for him. And this one is, it's an interesting movie. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I wanted to do it. It is a movie that is, it's definitely draped in supernatural elements, but for quite a long time in this movie, you could almost see it as like Sherlock Holmes for the mortician. You know, it kind of, sets off like this storyline of these two morticians, coroners, really. It's father and son, and they are investigating the mysterious death of this Jane Doe, who's brought into their mortuary fairly late in the night, and they kind of are tasked with coming up with the cause of death for this body before the next morning, because the police are like, the press are going to be breathing down our necks about this. We need to give them something. So they kind of set this in motion where you have like this time frame that needs to be adhered to. And here you go. Here's this mysterious body, and then figure it out. So you kind of are immediately set up with this mystery of what is this body? Where did it come? How did it get in the state that it's in? And that's pretty much the synopsis of the movie. And it's only later on in the movie that you actually get any supernatural elements to it. For the beginning of it, it's more like a murder mystery, sort of like true crime sort of thing, which I find pretty interesting.
Cue the Law and Order music. Dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun. That's right. And you've got some names here too. You got Brian Cox here. I know you said you like Brian Cox quite a bit.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of him. He's the Scottish Rip Torn.
yeah, pretty much. I think we've pretty recently there's been some more discussion about Brian Cox and his issues with like wokeness and stuff.
I haven't seen any of that, but
he's been kind of speaking out about stuff like that. But you know,
he's 80 years old. Leave the poor man alone, okay?
As an actor, he's really fun. You know, he's shown up in quite a few horror movies as well. You know, Trick or Treat is one that I really know him from, and you know, he's great in that movie. But yeah, he's a great actor and kind of interesting. Super Troopers, yeah. Kind of interesting to see him in this movie.
Manhunter, which we'll do one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's always really entertaining and a lot of fun. And, you know, he's truly a thespian. You know, he's a great character actor, you know, always puts on a good show and is, you know,
not quite Malcolm McDowell level.
Well, like,
not thespian showing up to every Rob Zombie movie. Not yet, anyway.
Listen, well, Malcolm, well, Brian's got to take what work he can get. Malcolm's, I mean, is still riding off that Clockwork Orange and Caligula money, so he's free to do whatever he wants. That's why a decade ago, we got one of the greatest commercials of all times with him and James Earl Jones saying, "Totes my goat."
Absolutely.
And for him to be in Home Alone 7, the holiday heist, or whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah. And then you got Emile Hirsch, who plays Brian Cox's son in this movie. It doesn't have a huge body of work to draw back to, but I think one that people probably most know him from is his portrayal of Into the Wild, the guy who got lost in the wilderness and ultimately succumbed. And also the new
Speed Racer. Don't be.
So I thought everybody forgot about that one. The 2008 Wachowski brothers, but now sisters, movie that I never saw. Did you see that movie?
No. No, I heard it's actually not,
right there.
I heard it's actually not that bad, but it just from the looks of it, it's.
I think I blocked that one out from my memory. Completely forgot that came out.
Oh, John Goodman is Pop's Racer. Got to watch it now.
There you go.
That was a very dangerous thing for you to do. Sweet.
And one thing I like about the Autopsy of Jane Doe, I'll say before we get into, you know, we'll take a break and talk about the beer and stuff. I do like that, you know, in the movie, on the poster, you get Emile Hirsch, you get Brian Cox. You don't get the poor lady who has to be naked the entire fucking movie. She doesn't get any billing whatsoever, except on the back of the box it says, "And introducing Olwyn Kelly." Like, the poor lady, bush hanging out everywhere, doesn't even get on the fucking poster, get a name on the poster.
Well, she is on the poster.
She is the poster. That's true. She doesn't get a credit on the poster.
Well, that makes sense, though. She's Jane Doe. Why would she get a credit?
Just feel a little bad.
Well, you should.
She's bearing all, barely gets credit. All right. Let's take a break real quick. Talk about the beer that we have on the show. It's a special one. It's one our beer mule got for you, and I just happened to be included in the goodies, right?
Yeah.
Technically, I'm not even supposed to. I'm only supposed to have like one, right? Or something like that.
Yeah, I was only supposed to give you one.
You're supposed to Bogart three for yourself and give me one.
I'm watching my figure, so I can't have three double IPAs.
There you go. What do we got on the show? What'd you get?
We have another Equilibrium beer. Our Fiden's mule, also sometimes will mule us Equilibrium because his dad lives down there.
Oh, this is the first time. It's the first timer, right?
What, that we've had EQ?
No, that it's an actual mule from EQ.
It's the first time it's been mule.
Yeah.
Usually we can get stuff up around here and deliver too, but he was down there. He asked if I wanted anything and really suggested that I should get this beer in particular because it's the second time they've done it, and it's a beer that gets raved reviews. And it's really good. So that's what I got. I got this beer, and it's a collab beer, too, with Parrish Brewing, which I've never had any Parrish.
No.
Never even heard of Parrish, to be honest with you.
No.
But I said, why not? It sounds cool. I like the name of the beer, the can. Pick me up a 4-pack. I should have got some pulled pork and macaroni and cheese, too, because on EQ's website, you can get some, too. And I didn't. But I got this 4-pack, and it's their collab with Parrish called Ghost in the Laboratory. A double India IPA, 8.5%.
Yep.
And it's got this nice skull and like a nice 1980s like wire framing, like 3D, with a hoppy head and feathers and all that jazz.
Reminds me of like Ghostbusters. You know, like the one ghost that's like the hair goes flies up on it, stands up on end. You know that ghost? Yeah. That's what it reminds me of. It's cool. I like the can a lot. Like it's nicely designed too. It's like it's simple in its like design, but it's got nice artwork. I like it. And this one, it's a collaboration quite literally too, because this is using the recipes from the two breweries' different beers that they've put out, which is straight out of the laboratory from Parrish, or I'm sorry, straight out of the laboratory from Equilibrium, and Ghost in the Machine from Parrish. And it's kind of mashing both of those up into this collaboration beer, which I think is pretty cool. That's how you get the name Ghost in the Laboratory. So what do you think?
I think it's pretty good. I won't say it's great, though. It's really solid night buff, double IPA, very smooth, goes down easy. It is dank. I'm not sure which hops they put in here, but it's definitely...
This has a heavy dose of different types of Citra, it says. Citra Incognito, Citra T90, Citra Lupomax. So a lot of Citra.
I would have said like Citra or Amarillo probably.
Mm-hmm.
But it's definitely dank, and that's nice. And I do like dank IPAs that give you that taste. It's really good, but the problem that I have, and it's a problem that I've been noticing that I've been having with almost every EQ beer I have these days. There's something about it when they have it that has this weird, tinny, adjunct, lingering yeastiness to it, like a fucking homebrew. It's not bad, but it's there enough to make it kind of a little off-putting and not, like, totally clean on the palate and finish the beer. And that was really prominent when we did the NASA beers, those NASA IPAs. Like, some of them were really good, but a lot of them had, that weird, overly yeasty, unfinished homebrew aftertaste to it. So I do think this is really good, but I wouldn't say this is like out of the park. Like,
yeah. So I know what you're saying. Some sort of like adjunct is adding sort of that distinctiveness to it. I won't say that I don't dislike it. It does have like its own distinctive taste to it, and I do get that here. Like I do think that this beer is pretty good. I think it's nice and smooth. It's got a nice dankness to it, especially if you like dank beers. Like one of my favorite IPAs or mass marketed IPAs is Fiddlehead, and that tends to have a very heavy dankness to it, and this beer does too. This one, I guess, you know, I would say it probably has quite a bit of like orange to it too. You know, that citrus from the Citra really comes out. Seems like that, you know, it's kind of like an obvious observation, but very citrusy, very dank. You know, that Citra hop is really strong in this because this is double dry hop too. So, I mean, overall, I think it's really good. I would be curious to try a Parrish beer because I have not tried them, and I doubt we really get them here at all. They're from Louisiana. I really doubt that we get anything.
The only Louisiana beer we get around here is a Beatus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really doubt we have even any availability for us to get a Parrish beer. So, you know, it is kind of like an interesting collaboration too. Like, all of a sudden, just like when a Parrish or Equilibrium reach out to each other, it's a weird collaboration, but it's cool. Wish we, you know, we had some more Parrish beers to try up here, but I am curious about, you know, their brewing, and I've never had any, but curious to see what they make. But I think this is a pretty good, pretty solid offering from both companies. I do see why people are really liking it, because, you know, it is pretty strong NIPA with a nice dankness to it. So, thanks, Spearmule, for that one, too. I'm going to crack into my second, even though I'm not supposed to.
Well, sure you are.
All right, so let's talk about the autopsy of Jane Doe. Let's set the mood. It's a dark and stormy night, right? You're in a mortuary. And that's pretty much where, like, the film leaves it. They're like, this atmosphere, perfect for a creepy movie.
And all I could, all I could think of is, like I said, is the beginning, like, first minutes of the Mary Jane's Last Dance video for Dante and the Heartbreakers. Because it's at the mortuary, too.
Yeah. Well, and so this movie really brings to mind a couple of other different movies, maybe not in the same themes or even atmosphere or anything like that, but, you know, you've Return of the Living Dead, you have to at least mention, because that has a pretty significant, you know, funeral home mortuary scene. And then also you have, like, probably like Tales from the Crypt kind of like comes to mind as well, just like the whole building. I think those two really, plus, you know, there is a particular element of Reanimator that takes place in mortuary-esque areas too, with you know, dead bodies coming to life.
Great. All I can think of is the fucking song.
Yeah, I know. The catchy Reanimator theme
that we used for our Zombie-thon.
Absolutely. So this movie, you know, it certainly seems to have inspirations from those movies, but I think it really does something all on its own. Like I said, it does really start out as sort of this mystery type, almost true crime movie about discovering the cause of death of bodies that they have in this mortuary with this coroner and his son, and they're just kind of going through the motions of doing an autopsy. And I think that's really interesting, especially for people who are interested in true crime, or like me, I'm very interested in cadaver science too. And I find it very fascinating, and I think this movie kind of touches on that, especially at the beginning when Emil Hirsch's girlfriend comes over and she's like, do you guys really keep dead bodies here? It's like, geez, we got
fucking weirdo.
He's like, yeah, we got three right here in the drawers. And she's like, well, I want to see one then. I want to see that dead body in there. And so he pulls out one, and it's just like a lady that died of, like, fairly natural causes. And it, you know, obviously, of course, after you've gone through the autopsy, the body is not in great condition, right? Like, you can think of it like a puzzle. You're taking shit apart. You're pulling it out. You're taking the brain out. You're taking the heart out. You're sticking them in all different kinds of containers. And so, like, when you sew it back up together, it's not like you just go right back to, you know, looking like you did before they cut you open. So of course this lady.
What does that say? As Vito Corleone would say, after, you know, when he goes down to Bonacera, mortician, when Santino gets shot up. So look at all the mess, good my boy.
Exactly. And this film kind of touches on that. It touches on the fact that, like, you know, when you're doing an autopsy, there's a lot of things that go into it, and there are things that you see in the everyday of doing this job that you just really can't unsee, that you can't change from your mind, that you experience this. And I think part of the movie goes into that, especially with Jane Doe, as they start to uncover the things that have happened to her. And they're kind of like, holy shit, and, you know, all of these things happen. How could someone do all of these things to somebody? And that kind of goes into the being a coroner, because it would be great if you were a coroner and you worked in a mortuary and everybody that came in just dropped dead of natural cause. They're like, yeah, they had a heart attack. Yeah, they had cancer.
No, right. You pull the Rusty from L.A. Noire. When you're doing all the murder cases, it's probably the husband.
Yeah,
it's always the husband. Cole, what are you wondering about? It's the husband. But also, to quote L.A. Noire, the coroner in there, every time it's around, yeah, I didn't see any ligature marks there, but I'll check for semen samples. Yeah, I didn't see any, but I'll check for semen samples.
Yeah, I mean, but it would be really nice if that's all that came into your mortuary. Like, and you were, you know, in a coroner in a small town, and that's all you had to deal with. But no, you know what? As a coroner, you have to deal with a lot of other shit too, like bad accidents that happen to people, and murders that happen.
I almost feel like to be a coroner, you have to be a sociopath, but you have to be one like who's like well controlled.
Sure.
Because, I mean, like, as fascinating as it is, there's a lot of things that, like, I mean, I, like, in horror, especially in horror films and stuff, like, it doesn't, like, not, it doesn't really tingle me and, like, make me kind of be repulsed and, like, ugh. This film does a pretty good job at being, what am I looking for the word? It's, like, shock. And exploitative, thank you. Exploitative, but not in a bad way.
Sure.
But like, but the way like the body's there,
yeah,
and how they're being cut and the work they're doing, it's all, like you said, it's very procedural and it works really well. But there's like a, at least for me, like a very like, but I'm not queasy with like blood and like that kind of stuff, but like it is really queasy though. Like, all right, gotta sit here and open up the chest cavity, here's a scalpel and break the ribs, you know, to get to organs to see what's going on. And it's like, whoa, like holy shit. Like,
I think what you're trying to say is like it has almost like a Mondo element to it. You know, when you think about movies like Faces of Death or things like that, you know, some of those Mondo elements where they would show you particular things that may be uncomfortable. I think that you can kind of say that about the autopsy of Jane Doe, because it does take a very clinical view of how a coroner might conduct their studies. You know, they go very into detail about how you would do these sorts of things. You do an external exam, you do an internal exam, you're going to go and do all the chemical exams on the stuff that they pull out of them. It's very clinical about how it approaches that. And I think in some cases, especially people who don't deal with death that often, that's kind of shocking, like what you do to the body after it's dead. Because we, especially in American culture, we kind of see the body and burial and all of the treatments that we do to dead people in reverence to their body, we kind of see that as profaning the body, right? When you do an autopsy like that, because you're literally dissecting them. You're taking it all apart. You are causing damage to the body that may not have been there prior to death. And you're doing it in the search for answers. But it also is kind of shocking, especially, you know, if a family member to come in and see you just hacking away at the rib cage and, you know, taking out all these pieces. It's kind of a shocking thing that happens to your body after death. But I think the autopsy of Jane Doe does a really great job of showcasing that, what happens in a clinical way. So it's not, I don't think it's lurid. I don't think it's like showing you this stuff and like trying to go a hostile route where it's trying to disturb and gross out the viewer in like any gore way. But I think it's fairly realistic in its presentation. And then later on, you kind of, especially as they start to get into Jane Doe specifically and do the like more of the internal exam, it's kind of shocking all the things that they find that have happened to her. It's like at some point they're like, holy shit, like this is something that we've never seen before. Like, yeah, we've seen dead bodies and we've seen them have smoke inhalation and burns on the inside. And we've seen like excess bleeding when we bring them in, but we've never seen like somebody has tattoos on the inside of their skin. That's like that's going a little far there, you know?
Yeah. No, you're right. It's not like, you know, it's visceral.
Yep.
You know, how it's portrayed. And I think, you know, it definitely, the visceralness of the actual autopsies to how cold and calculating, like the proceduralness of, like, you know, trying to find what's the cause of death of the people that are being autopsied in this film, you know, it's realistic. And that's why it's probably, you know, unsettling, because it's not portrayed cartoonishly. Like for instance, as you were talking about before we even got into the actual review of the movie, Jane Doe is, it's not a prosthetic. It's an actual person sitting there on the table, you know, as they're cut and then doing the stuff, like not actually cutting and doing the stuff, but constantly seeing like who is being, or Jane Doe in this movie, Olin Kelly. She's there constantly and you get to see her face and like, you know, just coldly, blankly staring and like her body that's actually being used in the shots where they're not, you know, doing like actual autopsy work. So like, you know, it makes it that much more visceral because there's that connection there. You know, it's not cartoony. It's not.
Yeah. Fake. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting how they use her. You know, she is a prop, but she's also literally a character that's just always there.
Yeah.
You know, and she doesn't have to, she literally does not do anything. She doesn't have to do anything, but her presence as a character is still always there. And I think, you know, that's interesting, especially when they're trying to map out like what happened to her, murder that could have potentially occurred to her. She's always there. And that's part of the thing that, you know, the film kind of boils down to at the end is, you know, she experienced all of this stuff and is reenacting it. It's kind of an interesting concept, especially since, again, she doesn't really do anything in this movie, besides lay on the slab. She doesn't have to like pull out dialogue. She doesn't have to give facial expressions, but it's still a part, an acting part that really sells everything that needs to be here to make the viewer feel like this is a reality. So I think, you know, she does a really good job of that. And the film, you know, it does a really good job of presenting all of these things graphically, and being able to present a body that truly does look dead. Has been historically difficult. Like if you think about some of the older films where if you just like look closely on screen, you could tell they're breathing. People are breathing like when they're dead. And that was the thing that older films struggled with a lot. For whatever reason, they just did not take into account like the realism of looking at somebody who is supposedly dead and you just see them breathing.
I think the fact that it's like shot on like 8mm or something, where it's like really old, so you're not gonna be able to fucking tell anyway.
Sure.
So it's like,
yeah,
now everything's in 4K and so upscaled, and you know, like when you watch like half the shit now, you can see like, oh, there's a car in the distance driving back, like in this period piece, and it's like, yeah, well, you couldn't see it really in the original shot, but now you can.
Well, this film does a really good job of hiding all of those things that you shouldn't see, you know, breathing, blinking, unless they want you to see it, like when her nose starts twitching because the fly's coming out of her nose and things like that. From what
Wikipedia said, she was casted because of her knowledge of yoga and helped her be able to control her body.
Right, being able, I don't think I could be that still.
Honestly. No, I couldn't. No,
I fucking have to when I had to have an MRI, I'm like fucking jumping around in my skin there. I can't imagine. Knowing I just got to be laying on this slab for whatever 10-hour shooting period that you're doing. It's tough. So yeah, I mean, we talked about like the gore work is really good. You know, everything looks really realistic. I love like all of the elements that they bring to this. Like, hey, grab me those, you know, it looked like hedge cutting shears, but they're fucking rib cutters, you know, and stuff like that. They just pull out and you're just kind of like, wow, that's what really goes into mortuary work. They do a really good job, but I think like what the film really does well too is it just sets a really good atmosphere. It does have that, you know, generic, really tropey, like it's a dark and stormy night, blah blah blah, you know, it's thundering and lightning and stuff, but the way that it's shot, the way that it's, you know, it presents that to you, that this storm just kind of comes out of nowhere, it's, you know, actually supposed to be really bad too, because there's a radio that keeps mentioning how terrible the storm is going to be, and then you kind of have, you know, all of the lights going off in the mortuary because it's in the basement, so it's a naturally dingy place. All of that setup is really well done and kind of sets the eerie tone for this movie.
You know what would made it less eerie? John Saxon would solve the case in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, of course he would know the why immediately.
Pin that down, right? That's what I was waiting for. Like, when we get to see our sheriff, just be like, why? Like, get John Saxon on the call, damn it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, too, because Brian Cox's character, he doesn't really care about, like, the why of why was this person killed. He just cares about how did it occur. How did the literal death occur? And eventually, throughout the autopsy of Jane Doe, they kind of start caring about the why. Because the why is really important to the element of ritual that this Jane Doe unearths as you know they kind of go through this autopsy.
Well, it's kind of smart, though, because, I mean, if you're at his age, you've been probably a mortician for like 30, 40 years at that point. At that point, you probably are at the, like, the why doesn't fucking matter. Like, you know, don't bog yourself down too much in the details.
Yes.
And get yourself upset. Just figure it out. Let them know.
Exactly. I think that's where it comes from, because, you know, this film does kind of deal with that, the idea of being upset about this work that you're doing. Because, like I said, not everybody's coming in and they just died of natural causes. And so they kind of mention that throughout the movie. Like, Brian Cox is like, I've seen this before. I worked on a case where fucking there was, you know, a prostitution ring.
Yeah.
And they fucking bound these women, cut their tongues out. Yeah, that's pretty awful, right? And so he's kind of...
Well, no, I was saying, speaking of, like, sorry to interrupt, but with, like, Emma, though, when she wanted to see the bodies, and there's the three bodies, the one that we saw that was, like, from the house that was scorched and shit, but, like, she pulls the second one out, and he's like, oh, like, why is the face covered? He's like, gunshot wound to the head.
Right.
Seen that? He's like, at Point Blank Range, seen that a billion times. Somebody offering themselves, you know. Why don't you pull it off and see what it looks like?
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, I guess at a certain point, you have to compartmentalize yourself and you just say, like, well, yeah, I'm seeing this awful stuff that's happened to people. But you kind of have to forget about, again, like, the why of what happened and just do the science and the study of what happened to them, figure it out, and then case closed. You move on to the next body. Which I think is interesting, because that is something that the film doesn't touch upon as much, but, like, police officers, paramedics, you know, firefighters, they all kind of have to do this to some extent, especially because there are going to be times where, you know, sometimes they're rescuing kittens from trees. Sometimes they're having to spend someone's last moments as they got in a car accident and they're literally dying. It's something that you kind of have to compartmentalize and keep away from your everyday life, because if you can't, then you literally will not be able to, like, function as, you know, as a person, because there are horrible things that happen literally every day to everybody. And it's hard to sometimes, like, separate yourself from the fact that, like, you in the future, you might have a horrible death. You know, that's something every human has to live with the knowledge of, unfortunately. And I think that's, you know, that's kind of where the autopsy of Jane Doe goes. They find out, holy shit, this Jane Doe had a lot of fucking bad stuff that happened to her. She had her tongue cut out. She had...
Lungs and heart or...
Somehow they, you know, basically burned her, but she doesn't have any outward appearances of it, you know, been burned alive. She has, like, all these stab markings on the internal organs. Obviously, her skin, we talked about, on the inside has, like, all of these ritualistic tattoos. And then she was also forced to swallow her own tooth in, like, a... it's almost like a shroud with the same markings on it. It's like, all that stuff is pretty fucking horrible. I'm sure it wasn't pleasant to go through. And they kind of uncover all of that. And I just like how they kind of go from, like, this could be normal, right? Like, maybe it was a ritualistic murder or something, but it's kind of normal, to, like, it just keeps getting more and more outlandish as they go along, to the point where it's obvious that they cannot discount that there's something supernatural going on. So about, I think it's like halfway through the movie, the film really does take a supernatural turn where all the lights blow out and they start to actually experience, like, the bodies that are in the mortuary. They actually come out of their metal containers and walk around and stuff. What did you think about that? Did you like the supernatural element to it? How did you feel?
I thought it was fine. I think it's done well enough and it's well paced. I think the problem that it kind of gets into, especially near the end, is that it kind of enters Conjuring territory where it's just like, oh, like, here's my big brained IQ. Like, what's going on? And we're like, we figured it out. And like, once they like kind of tell you, like, fully explain, like, what's going on, like, the whole, like, fun of it's gone. Like, I don't need to hear, like, them, like, deduce, like, their Batman in Arkham Asylum, like, this is what the Riddler was trying to achieve. Like, leave the clues there for, like, you to kind of, like, figure out what's going on. I think by specifically saying, like, wait, so she's got no bruises and she's a fresh corpse and everything, but her eyes are gray. And you cut her open and shot all these weird things. And, oh, wait, there's a cloth with her molar in it that we found that her molar was missing. And wait, the cloth has Roman numerals on it, but wait, it also has, oh, it's Leviticus, this from Leviticus, and that is about witches, and the witch, and she's a witch, but maybe she's not a witch. Maybe she was a person, but because she... And then there was, and witches don't exist, but I mean, maybe because they did all this ritualism that she's actually became a witch, and now she's a witch and she's gonna kill us all. Like, I mean, I thought the supernatural element was fine, but I think when they like went like headed over heels into like, this is what's going on, dumbass territory, is where it like it kind of lost me, because it's like, all right, like, you know, you're going a little too.
You mean like when they kind of pulled out, they're like, the Northeast.
Yeah.
17th century.
Jimson weed.
Witches.
No, yeah. Actually,
I didn't really like that too, because I thought that was kind of hilarious that no one remarked on the fact that they pulled out an entire, like, intact flower.
Yeah.
Jimson flower in their stomach.
Like, she's got nightshade in her stomach.
It was like intact. A huge flower in your stomach, like, not digested, not chewed. Yeah. They were like, oh, I don't know. Jimson weed, I don't know, this is weird. The whole gigantic petal is in her stomach.
Same thing. Well, the same thing with the molar and the tooth. They're like, huh, well, that tunic should have been clearly dissolved by her stomach acid. That's really fucking weird.
Yeah.
You know, like, I do like the deductive work that they're doing to figure it out, but I think the fact at the very end, they spell it out completely for you. Like, here's what's going on, asshole, is... What turns me off from the supernatural element, because it's like, again, like, it all at the end comes off as like very Conjuring, is like, we're gonna figure out what's going on, and I'm Vera Farmiga, and I save the day, right? You know,
yeah,
I think the leaving it at more up to ambiguity, especially too, because they play with the idea of like, are they hallucinating? What's going on? Like, is it actually supernatural, or are they just going crazy? Would have made it a lot more fun with the fact that they spoiled that part with the fight, like the intro of this film of like another family being, you know, taken out in the same fashion, and the sheriff being like, this doesn't make any sense, and they get down to the basement and they're like, oh wait, there's a random prostitute down here, what's going on, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
I think that would have made it better. Like, yeah, I mean, I get why, like, if you had with that intro, it makes sense with what they did to tie it all together. But I still think the fact that they spelled it out for you so clearly and didn't leave any ambiguity or room for you to, like, have a deduction with really does kind of sour me a bit. But, I mean, at the same time, the fact that they did, it does neatly tie together. So it's not like it's poorly written, but I just don't personally care for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want a horror film at the end to, like, spell like what's going on out for you.
Yeah,
that's the kind of the fun of trying to sit and guess and be like, what's the red herring, what's going, you know?
Yeah, I can see that. I do think when they have to come to the conclusion like it's a witch, you know, it's a little bit overspoken there. I like the supernatural elements. I think it does it really well. Like, I think that there are a lot of moments that work very well that aren't too tropey. The one where all the lights blow out and then you just hear the bodies coming out of the, you know, the metal mortuary bins. That's really cool because You know that it's happening. You can't see anything. And you it's just kind of like got a nice little, like play with the audience there that you don't really know what's coming. I like that quite a bit. I also like the toad tag that they have with the bell. I think that works pretty well. And I also do like when, you know, the body's coming down the hallway and then all of a sudden it's not the body and it's actually Emile Hirsch's girlfriend. And then he's like, oh, fuck.
Well, that was so telephone.
It was. You definitely know that it's going to happen because you know that they left it as, hey, come back later. Around 11 o'clock, I'll be free. So you know it's coming, but I think it still works. And some of the other ones, too, like you said, there's a Conjuring element to it, but it doesn't fall into line with the same ideas of the Conjuring where the Conjuring always has like that sort of ghost that does like the facial features. And this one doesn't it. They actually more resemble like actual dead bodies than like a overwrought ghost. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think this one does that better, especially like when they're looking through the door and they just see like the corpse that we've seen before and she rips her mouth open from the stitches. It's better than like what the Conjuring gives us with their ghosts, which are always very stylized in a specific way. So yeah, I mean, I like the supernatural element. I do agree with you. Maybe it's a little, telephoned in at the end. They really have to kind of sell you. And especially, too, they have to give a very specific MO for what's going on. So they're like, well, it's got to be Jane Doe enacting what happened to her on us. And we're just in the way. And so they kind of have to give her a motive because one doesn't really exist. And I feel like it would probably just be better left unsaid.
It's really stupid at the end. Because at the end, like, it's not like they're devout Christians or anything. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like something tie that together. Like, just to have them be like, wow, she was punished, you know, for being a witch, though she wasn't a witch. And so she became a witch, and now she's killing people as her ritual, as her revenge. Yeah, fuck off of that. And that's kind of annoying because then it's like, well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of just like that it's this curse of this body that's, you know, it's constant. And, you know, I don't think that we really need to be told, like, well, she's reenacting it on them. Because, again, like you said, it's not like they've done anything specifically to get this wrath from her. You know, they're not, it's not like they were, they had 17th century relatives that were participating
Brian Cox does point out, but like again at the same time it makes like the motive like moo. It's like, who gives a shit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think a motive is necessary. I think it's just fine, especially because Jane Doe, all of her is left unsaid. Her history, her background, her name. It's fine to just let that be. There's no motive. It just happens. I think that would have been a little bit more successful at the end of the movie. But this is one of those movies that does not... There's a lot of movies that start out really well, especially supernatural movies. Start out really well, and then they get really hokey as they go along. And I don't think Autopsy of Jane Doe has that problem. It definitely has a nice atmosphere that maintains throughout, where it doesn't get too cheesy or lose its steam as it goes.
It does get hokey in parts, so. Emile Hirsch is hokey.
Well, it's hard to believe he's, what, like a 19-year-old kid, right?
Yeah, well, you're hot. Don't forget, before I fuck you, you're hot, and I like you. Ha ha. Well, you know, come on. My dad needs my help. You've blown me off again, but he needs my help. Like, he's kind of his whole character is like kind of hokey. And then like as they're going through like doing the autopsy, he's like, is that melanoma? It could be underneath the skin. And then he's like, maybe it's a punishment. Maybe we're being punished. It's like, okay, Elijah Wood, come down.
Yeah,
he's not bad. He's not bad, but he is hokey. Like, a lot of the lines that he's given is really hokey.
Agreed. I do think that he's a little bit hokey, hard to believe as the age that he's supposed to be portraying.
I'm 14-year-old medical
assistant. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That is funny. Mm.
You know what would have made this a lot more interesting to kind of tie it together? You know how they kind of skirt around the idea that Brian Cox's wife is dead?
Mm-hmm.
And that he's kind of barely hanging on to, like, memories of her? Not really talked up. Wouldn't it be more interesting if instead of this fucking Salem ghost, if, like, maybe it's tied to her?
Mm.
Like, maybe her soul's, like, trapped somewhere?
Well, poor Stanley the cat.
Oh, I know. Brian Cox breaks into that with no problems. Just snaps it as it after it got trapped in the vent.
Then brings it to the
crematorium. It's a.
I feel like that's not something that you would use for just a cat. Not saying that like the cat is just a cat, but like I feel like there's like regulations involved in like
what can get thrown in there? It's not like you'd be like, oh, I'm done using this newspaper.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just gonna fire it up and just like let it rip. Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny, but yeah, poor Stanley the cat. You know, like he was an asshole, but here's my cat.
I know he didn't get a mouse. He got like a fucking rat when they.
I would not be Emil Hirsch picking that thing up with my hand, with you know my bare hands.
He washed
in a fucking gigantic ass rat.
He washed his hands afterwards. Okay.
Yeah, still, I would watch.
Hell, they show him washing his hands afterwards. So, you know, after dealing with, you know, giant field larvae, wash your hands.
Jesus. I'd be afraid of all kinds of diseases for that rat.
I know, I'd get a text from you for days.
Yeah. Think I got rabies. Exactly, exactly.
Think I got Lyme disease.
I know. Anything else that we didn't cover that you want to talk
about? I do want to talk about Brian Cox specifically.
Oh, sure.
I do think he did that was a really good job. He has this great stoicism and cynicism, but he's also really fun, like, you know, and really plays the role really. He's a straight shooter, does a great job. And I, like, again, like, that's what you can expect from Brian Cox. I mean, whether he's a professional asshole now like James Woods or not, couldn't tell you. Ryan keeps tabs on the Twitter universe because I won't give Elon my money. But he does a great job, though. Like, he always does a great job at, you know, just portraying the person that he's trying to be. I think he does a great job here. He's really engaging and fun and, you know.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he does a good job. He brings an energy to it, especially, like, in the opening moments where he's, like, going out to smoke a cigarette. He comes back in. He's like,
Didn't you like that whimsical music that was playing randomly?
Yeah.
As he's lighting a cigarette out back, like.
Yeah.
He's lighting a match, like.
And I just like when, you know, when he comes back in, he's like, no, try me. I'll let her look at any bodies in there.
Yeah.
And then, you know, he kind of just has that nice little, like, mischievousness to him. He's got his coffee cup, and he's just like.
Did you like that low-rent Pearl Jam that was playing when we were first seeing them open up? Like,
is that Pearl Jam? It sounded exactly like Pearl Jam.
It's not. I was looking it up. It's the Temperance Movement, I think.
Oh, really? It sounds. Like,
but it does sound a lot like Eddie Vedder.
It
vocals.
Really did.
Ain't gonna cut open body.
He really did. He really did.
Gonna cut that body open, black as night, black as night.
And you know what this movie doesn't have too? A coroner eating a sandwich and then putting it on the dead body, which is like a staple of like pretty much every like you know like. Crime show, like,
oh, the paramedic.
He's a quirky guy.
Or the paramedic saying, like, I don't want to fuck that dead body.
Yeah, right.
I want to take them tips right out and fuck them.
Yeah, can you imagine father-son moment where they're like, those are some pretty nice titties on that corpse.
See the way they're not. Do you see how like they are? They're not too big, not too small. They don't dank, like hang off the side. They're just right. And that bush.
There was no inappropriate swabbing of the vagina. It was all just so clinical, you know.
No.
How could they take it so seriously?
Can you imagine if Rob Zombie directed this film? We need more vaginal swabs. That's what we need. And we need more surliness from the paramedic who's bringing her in, saying how he wants to put his balls on her forehead.
Exactly. The great Rob Zombie. All right, so on a scale of 0 to 10 movies at the Strand, which I'm not sure what they were going to go see. I'm curious what they were going to go see at the Strand when he didn't actually get to go out and go see the movie.
It Follows.
It Follows, yeah.
No, wait, you know, this is an IFC movie. Documentary now.
There you go.
Or, what's the Fred Armisen show again? Portlandia.
Both of them are Fred Armisen shows, but.
No, just Portlandia.
So, what would you rate The Autopsy of Jane Doe?
I'll give it a 7.5. I was really pleasantly surprised by this film. I mean, like I said, I'm kind of shocked that you said maybe it's just within horror circles. The fact that you said it was a pretty big thing to do in the 2016, because I don't remember hearing about it at all in any shape or form. So I didn't really have any thoughts going into it. Didn't really know too much. Just sat down and watched it on Tubi. And it was, you know, it exceeded my expectations. It's a really good, like, procedural horror film with, you know, mortician work being the crux, and it's really well done. The supernatural element, too, is good, though I think it kind of overstays its welcome with how kind of hammy and corny it gets at the end. But I do think it's a well-made effort. It looks really good. It's really shot competently. I think Brian Cox does a great job, and I think Emile Hirsch, though he does get corny stuff, he is very good, too. And I do think Olin Kelly as, you know, Jane Doe does a great job. Like, all the shots that you do get to see of her and her reactions of what's going on, really good. The violence is very visceral, very real. If you're not really somebody who's into the idea of, like, you know, ribs being cut open, skulls being cut open, you know, hearts being dissected. I mean, it's not like there's a great deal of it. I mean, there is a great deal of, like, mortician work. But, I mean, just, like, the idea of having to look at it, if you're not into that, then it's going to be really visceral and probably disgusting. And it was a little bit, to me, disgusting because it was a little, cringy. And not in a bad way, but, like I said, it's very visceral and hits a nerve. I think it's a really well-made film. It's a good idea, a good concept. It's a brisk 85 minutes long, moves along beat to beat, has a plotted out course. I don't care for the ending. I think the fact that they wrap it up too neatly in a bow in the supernatural way and explain what the fuck's going on really kind of undercuts what was going on in the first two-thirds of the film. But I do think they do a good, you know, Andre Overed does a good job at tying it all together and making it coherent. Because it does make sense. I just personally don't care for how explicit, the ending is and how on the nose it is. It's a really good film. I'm really pleasantly surprised by this one. I'd say, like I said, 7.5 out of 10. I'd say definitely go check it out. It's a brisk, easy, fun little watch.
Yeah, I would give this one an 8 out of 10. I think it's a really fun movie. I really liked it a lot. I think if you're in the right atmosphere, I think this could be really, you know, it could really give you a creepy feel to it because it does have a nice, eerie atmosphere. And if you, you know, if you've got a time where you can, you're in the dark, maybe you're by yourself, you know, dark and stormy night, be a perfect time to watch this movie. It does have a very spooky atmosphere to it, and I think it works really well. I think it would be a good Halloween movie too, to watch, but I think it does a lot of things really well. The autopsy work is great. If this movie was just about an autopsy with these two characters, I probably would watch it even if there was no supernatural element to it. I think it does the supernatural pretty well, which is, for me at least, surprising, considering that most supernatural movies tend to fall flat later on when they have to, you know, actually give the reason behind the ghost. Most of the time it's like, the ghost is misunderstood. You just got to figure out their secret and then they'll just let you go. I don't really like those kinds of like happy-go-lucky endings. This one doesn't have a happy-go-lucky ending, and it actually ends on a pretty dark note, that this ritual, this curse will continue to happen. Like Martin said, I don't really like that it has to look, absolutely spell it out for you. It's like, peat moss, northwest, or I mean northeast, burned alive at the stake. It's a witch. I don't like that it has to kind of like basically piece it together for you. But other than that, I think it does a really good job of setting up the supernatural element, setting up this idea of like, it is more of like a contemporary witch style element. Really good autopsy work and gore. That's not explicit just for the sake of it, but to present some realism. All the actors do a really good job, especially Brian Cox. And then Olwyn Kelly, you know, probably doesn't get enough recognition because she does a really good job of just laying there. It sounds like that should be something to not really, you know, praise, but she does a really great job of presenting herself openly, and it changes the context of the shot depending on how we're getting that, you know, the view of the body. It's really interesting how she can be a character and have no interaction whatsoever. It's a really fun movie. Check it out. I think it's free on Tubi, right? So
yes, it is.
Everybody can go check it out.
But yeah. So what do we got next week before we go into Red Hot 80s Action Month?
Let's see. Well, normally we would probably take a week off, right? So, but we still have the 27th. So, do you want to try to shoot for Asteroid City on the 27th if we can get it? Because you said it's on YouTube now to rent. Right.
So I'm assuming Amazon.
Is it like an exorbitant price, like $29.99?
No, it's like $3.99 they do.
Really?
I haven't seen it on YouTube. The rentals are only like $3.99. It's only for the day. Why would it be $29.99?
Like some of them, at one point, there were rentals that were like, yeah, like $20. I'm not even joking.
Well, also too, I almost...
Yeah, it's $19.99 on YouTube. I told you. They're extremely expensive when they do that streaming and theatrical release.
It wouldn't even cost that much to see it in a theater.
I know. That's what I mean. Because they're thinking, like, you've got a whole party with you. You didn't have to pay for the popcorn or the Coca-Cola. And you've got six other people in the room with you. So $19.99, that's a small price to pay considering... You went bless you.
Thank you.
If you went to a theater with six people, and you know, that'd be what, like $50 for tickets.
Fucking so stupid.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So,
oh, there's a couple of things I have in mind that I would like to do.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if we'll do them, but
well, this was my pick, so you're free to do that. If we can't get Asteroid City in any,
well, let's do a little mulling around real quick.
Okay.
I think Clueless would be fun because I saw a commercial that I don't see TV ever, but I saw a commercial watching Tubi and it was a Clueless. Alicia Silverstone was doing a commercial and it was based on Clueless. I was like, it would be a great 90s fun movie to do. Clueless.
It's been a while since I've seen it, but it is a fun movie.
Mean Girls. I mean, even though we're not in the school spirit, we'll never get to Mean Girls because that would be around October when we should do it. But that's how we're in Halloween mode.
True.
What else? Oh, there's a random Charles Bronson movie on YouTube for free. It's like Mr. Magic or Mr. Mystique or some shit. I don't know what the hell that's about. Which, by the way, YouTube free movies, they got a bunch of random ass weird ones. Like, you know, like if we wanted to finally do, like, I would like to do one of these days, but probably not going to do it this time because it's a 3-hour film. Duck You Suckers on there, Fistful of Dynamite, for free.
Mm-hmm.
But
it is funny because a lot of times when you bring your choice of movies, it's always like, it's like fucking 90s nostalgia. She's All That, Cruel Intentions.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Yeah, you know what's funny about that? What have you learned at the end of each one? You like them?
That I like them, but also nostalgia only goes so far.
How dare you?
She's All That, yes. Cruel Intentions, nostalgia only goes so far.
Well, yeah, but I mean, you didn't see She's All That. You totally missed out on that. Afterwards, you're like, yeah, Freddie Prinze in his seatbelt.
It's true. Yeah, I'm cool with Clueless. Clueless would be a fun one to do.
Like you said, there's a bunch that I'm thinking of. But, oh, yeah, so Mr. Majestic, that's a Richard Fleischer film, too.
Oh, is that what it is, Mr. Majestic?
Yeah, it's an action film with Bronson. There's a bunch of, like, shit that, I don't know. So I wouldn't pen Clueless down, but there's a bunch of shit that I think would just be fun to do because...
All right, we won't set it in stone.
Maybe we don't want to do
an action movie like Mr. Majestic because we're going to...
Well, let's do Soylent Green with Charlton Heston. It's people, you bastard.
At some point, we have to do the Clint Eastwood great. I think you know what I'm talking about.
Two Mules?
Yeah. Two Mules for Sister Sarah.
I don't think I could sit through.
Which is funny because it is a pretty well-regarded movie. Just maybe we weren't in a mind frame to
mediocre. Compared to, how about this? Hold on. If we can find it. Speaking of it, how about High Plains Drifter?
Yeah, that's fine.
The way you're like,
I mean, I was just saying that. That's fine.
Fine. Would you want to do? Do you want to do the Annie Western? Do you want to do Unforgiven? Because I know you haven't even seen Unforgiven.
I have not. No.
How have you never seen Unforgiven? We need to block out come the winter when we don't have much going on after Christmas. We need to do a Western month or two.
Yeah.
Where we just block out because. The fact that you have claimed to love Westerns and you haven't seen Unfucking Forgiven before. How dare you?
I know. I haven't seen quite a few classic Westerns.
You want to just do The Quick and the Dead?
The Quick and the Dead.
That's a Sam Raimi film.
Yeah, I'm open to anything, so. That's...
The fact that you're very...
We'll talk about it. I'm open to anything, really.
So we're going to come back next week with another kaiju film.
Yeah, right. No, I don't know. We'll figure something out for July 27th. And then we'll move into Red Hot 80s Action Summer.
So before we... I have one that we need to do.
Okay.
Commando. We haven't done Commando.
Yeah, we haven't done Commando.
Would you want to do? Do you want to do any sequels yet, or do you still want to be digging into others' works?
No. I mean, I think sequels are probably okay.
Because I would also love to do. So Commando, because we haven't done. Wait, we didn't do Schwarzenegger at all, did we?
We did Predator. That was the first one.
That doesn't count.
Yeah, no, Commando's fine with me. That's a good one.
You kind of want Police Story 2.
Okay.
Because, I mean, it's going to be long and hard before we really get a chance to dig too deep into Jackie Chan movies.
Uh-huh. It's too bad that Roadhouse 2 didn't take place until 2006.
Oh, are we going to... You want... So, for what were you going to do for Chuck, though?
Yeah, we need a Chucky movie.
Do you want Missing in Action 2, or do you want to do, like,
Oof. Missing in Action 2. Oh, man.
That's... Or do you want to do, like, Delta Force?
Yeah. How's it getting, like, Delta Force, maybe?
Because we almost covered most of this. We already did...
Most of these were 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, Invasion USA. I want to rewatch that movie. What a fucking classic.
I mean, he did have quite a few. I mean, he had, like, The Octagon. And
those are more, like, martial arts films.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Yeah, we can maybe Delta Force for that one.
Yeah.
Might find it hard to get into Missing in Action again. That was a tough one.
Are you sure about that?
So, yeah. Let's do that. And we'll come up with the rest.
Yeah. We'll have some, you know what? Everything we just talked about, shot this.
Yeah, probably won't happen.
Right? Probably won't happen this next episode, but you know what? This is, just so you guys know, this is the inner workings of the podcast. Have a beer and shoot the shit.
That's right. That's how we do it.
A big chunk of these movies that we've done, Ryan's gotten me to watch.
Get decided, yeah. All right, so...
Before you get into the spiel about what's going on to end it, also, too, a milestone, we're on year 9 now.
Is it officially 9 years?
Yes.
Yeah, I can't remember when we started. I know it was in sometime...
July 5th, 2015.
Oh, I'll have to... Up the wood on a new little...
Yes, little thing, which, I mean, year 8 was really good. So that was a really good picture. But, yeah, 2015, July 5th, Man, Pride, and Vengeance.
Nice. Been 9 years. Good work. Good work. We've had our ups, we've had our downs.
We'd had probably 500 episodes before COVID, so that...
Right, I know. Yeah, we took a break and... Because I have kids, can't do weekly. We were really pumping out. We were just...
I know. Ruined it.
Yeah.
Oh, someone died? We knew a few about them. Now can't do that.
Yeah, it's not timely anymore. Well, if you have enjoyed our podcast and you want to continue on listening to us for year 9 and further on, maybe even 9 more years, who knows? You can subscribe to us on pretty much any podcasting app that you can think of. We're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Homebase It. Oh, actually, not Stitcher. I think Stitcher is closing. Spotify.
We got the Spotify bar amount?
No. I think Stitcher is literally just ending that I've heard. But yeah, no, our home base is anchor.fm, which is now Spotify. You can subscribe to any of those or any podcasting app that you can think of. And
sure. We're Joe Rogan's 782nd favorite.
That's right.
it's nice. So all you Roganites.
That's it. Oh, okay. Yeah, leave us a nice review on there. We appreciate that. We are on Facebook and Twitter for the time being. Twitter. Maybe we'll make a Threads. I don't know. You can just find us on there, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. And we have an email address at bloodandblackrumpodcast@gmail.com. Write to us. Let us know what you like, what you don't like, what movies you want us to cover, and we'll keep that in mind. And then you can donate to us on our Patreon page, patreon.com/BloodandBlackRumPodcast. Thanks in advance. We'll put that towards beer. All right. So we'll see you in 2 weeks for a mystery movie. Maybe Clueless, maybe something else.
Maybe Asteroid City.
Who knows? We'll leave that up to chance.
I know. We're finally doing the Glass Menagerie.
Whatever it is, I'm sure it will be enjoyable.
Me is Sam Waters and Mom.
That's right. All right. Thanks for listening. Hope to see you back next week. And until then,
take care.